Qua sopra.
Ai.
There's not a rule that you have to use the three subs.
He's the best left back in Canada, without a doubt.
All right, and hello everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Third Sub Podcast, episode 178 of the show. I'm your co-host Alexander Gungi Ruzic, joined as always by Samuel Rowan. And I mean, we got a lot to talk about this week. The Vancouver Whitecaps wheeling and dealing. You know, who thought just because the transfer window is closed that the business would be done? Of course, the roster freeze this weekend. And it's back after an international break. Quiet one, at least certainly for fans of both MLS and Canadian soccer, I suppose. Although CPL rolls on some big matches as well across the CPL. But it's back now and we get an all-Canadian matchup. Toronto versus Vancouver to kick things off. So, I mean, lots to dive into as always. But, I mean, before we do, Sam, how's it going this week?
Yeah, going very well. A little bit quiet on the MLS front, but nonetheless, good to dive into some Vancouver Whitecaps topics. And we do have a little bit of news here. The Whitecaps back at training this week, obviously in preparation for TFC this weekend. Another busy triple match week upcoming. So although it has been quiet, it will pick up steam relatively quickly. Sounds like Sergio Cordova may be on the move. We'll dive into the implications of that potential. Could they bring someone else in? What does it mean for the offseason next season? What does it mean for their competing chances the rest of the way this year? I think it's an interesting topic. So we'll just dive through the news and notes in terms of what we have heard this week from training and through the back channels, and then look ahead specifically a little bit to TFC, our friends out east, and obviously what's been a bit of a struggle this season, but some interesting things going on. And this could be a different looking TFC side, if not in roster, certainly in terms of leadership on the touchline. So that's interesting. And then we'll talk a little bit of CPL as we always do on the back end as well. So yeah, hope everyone's ready to dive into more Whitecaps action with us. And we're kind of going to set the table here and get you ready for the week that lies ahead.
Yeah, might this be the best time of year? I mean, you got what? You got MLS playoffs, CPL playoffs. You got all the European soccer starting up again. So you get that. You got a couple of international breaks. Of course, this was a bad one if you're a Canadian fan. But they play next window and they play the window after that. And then you got all, I feel like all the other sports, they're all kind of starting back up or finishing depending on what you support. Always a great time of the year. Heck, you even got a Rugby World Cup starting. I thought that's fascinating and could be an interesting storyline to follow. But of course, in the Whitecaps land, as we mentioned, it's roster freeze week. So basically any sort of business, this is kind of when you have to do it by. And they've got some big outgoing business, which was no one was expecting. And I mean, we talk a lot about the Whitecaps and the new era and, how much their recruitment has changed. This is kind of one that's on the opposite side. This isn't recruitment. This is, not selling, getting, moving on. I don't want to say getting rid because that feels harsh, but they're moving on from a player. And I think it's something where it's a big surprise because this is, of course, for those unfamiliar, it was reported out there that the Vancouver Whitecaps are going to be moving on Sergio Cordova to Turkey. Their window also closes Friday, so that's why the move was able to go through. And it's a big surprise just because for those, who follow the Whitecaps for the past, this is a DP signing in Cordova. This one they spent a good chunk of money brought in to be a DP striker, and within a year they're moving on. But as we've also seen, there wasn't necessarily a fit there, and he ended up playing a lot on the bench, or when he started, that always hasn't fitted with the tactical. So the fact that now, less than a year later, he's going to be heading to Alanyaspor, as reported by Cesar Luis Merlo, credit to him for being on this, the Argentine journalist. So yeah, I mean, it's first of all, Sam, like, what do you make of this move? Because first off, I mean, given how Cordova settled into Vancouver, it's you know, seeing him get cut off after a year, it's ruthless, but it feels like one that could be best for all parties involved right away.
Exactly. I think that, you know, ruthless but best for all parties is a pretty good way of summarizing it. We'll just say, you know, obviously it's a bit time sensitive. It's not officially official yet as of recording. Not across the line. So, you know, if something out of the ordinary happens, you know, by the time you're listening, then obviously the situation may have changed, but it does sound like, you know, there's a pretty darn good chance it's going to happen. And I think the big thing that stands out to me is the, not just the ruthlessness, but the decisiveness of Axel Schuster and Vanni Sartini, where, you know, this is a player that they were excited about in the off season, and they've admitted to their mistake, right? Like, this is just, I think, tactically not the fit they were maybe imagining when they brought him in. We talked about, hey, well, you know, Vancouver played this counterattacking style. They'd like to really stretch teams out in transition, and we could see how Sergio could really fit into that style. And then ultimately, given the players they had, the strengths of the squad, the way things have shifted, that's not really the style Vancouver plays anymore, at least predominantly. Like, yes, they still have the ability to hit on the counter, but they certainly don't base their entire match strategy around that. And so I think that's made it a little bit difficult for Cordova to get a regular starting spot, because they want someone who can press. They want someone who's really good in hold-up play. Brian White does both those things tremendously. So it's a really tough out in the lineup, you know, not only just given Sergio Cordova's struggles this season with injury and with finishing chances, but just even if he was scoring at a similar rate to Brian White, he still doesn't have those non-scoring attributes that the Whitecaps are looking for, the way they're playing currently. So I think it was a good move in the sense that they realized the lack of fit there. And I think another circumstance probably where they're doing right by the player. This is something Axel Schuster's made a big deal out of, that, you know, hey, when Julian Gressel wanted to move on, they wanted to find a solution. You know, Sergio Cordova obviously wants more minutes, wants to probably be playing match in, match out as a starting striker. So they try to find an opportunity for him to go do that. And I also like the roster flexibility that it opens up. We've talked about a lot this year that it feels like they're playing with two DPs instead of three. And now their roster situation is going to reflect that as well, which I think gives you more options in the off season. And ultimately, you know, something else we talk about too is some extra opportunities for a Simon Boettcher, for a Levante Johnson, for anyone else they might want to take a punt on here who's a free agent, or, you know, guys that they can get in before the roster freeze, which sounds like there's at least some smoke there that they're sniffing around a couple targets. So yeah, I think that I like the way they've handled it, not only for the player, but just in terms of like admitting to mistakes, moving on, moving quickly. I think they know they have this short window, right? We're two and a half years left on this window. You can't be wasting another year that hoping that Sergio Cordova is just going to all of a sudden become a great fit. There's no time for that. You have to move on. They're moving on. It makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I think that's the way to put it. And I think it's one of those where, look, I think Cordova, I mean, understandably so, he hasn't necessarily been the fans' favorite throughout the year. I mean, you know, you get a DP spot, a striker, you want him to score goals, he hasn't. I mean, also part of that's not his fault. He's dealt with injury, which is always going to be tough. And, you know, I think what I'd say is just Cordova, good player, wrong team, wrong time. And that happens sometimes. And I think to see them cut their losses shows it's okay. It's one of those where you bite the bullet, it happens, you make the wrong decision. And I mean, yeah, you could argue from the start, but maybe the bigger argument is, was he worth making a DP? There's certainly arguments on both sides. You know, more likely based on what we've seen, anything more than a TAM deal was always going to be a slight overpayment. Of course, sometimes you make that, you risk that when you have built such a good roster. Otherwise, like the Whitecaps have, you can almost afford to be a bit sloppy. But in this case, it just, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't working out in the sense that, okay, at least if Cordova was playing, maybe he wasn't, yeah, 20 goal striker, but a 10 goal striker, you take that. But the, he wasn't. Brian White is getting the output you want out of him. He fits the system better. Cordova was on the bench. It just makes sense. And now I think the big thing, and we'll dive into now, is not just the, you know, of course, more playing time for the likes of Simon Boettcher, Levante Johnson. That's a no doubter. But this also opens up some intriguing roster flexibility, because as we know, the Whitecaps ended up going to three DPs this year. It was Ryan Gold and Andres Kubas and Sergio Cordova, because last year it was structured. They had two DPs because he came halfway through the season. Kubas wasn't a full DP or whatever. So they had three U22 players, you know, Caicedo, Vite, technically Kyle as well, just because he was, you know, he was on the books. But now, obviously, with Cordova coming in and Kubas going up to full DP, that meant they had to cut off some of their U22 players. So, you know, Caicedo, you see, goes on loan. Kyle is obviously gone. You got Vite. Now, with this added flexibility, now they just have two senior DPs. They could technically, for example, say you may, of course, there's the implication, will Richie Larea be a DP? There's a world if you make him a DP, but he's not a full DP, like not like a above 1.8 million threshold DP. You could have Richie Larea in as a DP in quotation marks, the same way Kubas was a DP last year, the same way some of the other DPs. And then you can bring in two U22 signings to complement Vite. If Vite leaves, you can make three. And then, you know, or you could sign a U23 DP and then do the same thing. And then you maybe try to find a way to get Larea in as a TAM player, or you don't bring Larea back and you just double down on younger U22s. Like, this move also gives you flexibility now where you could have as many as three new DPs next year. I'd say three just because those U22 players are basically like DP spots, as we've seen when you go after the likes of a Vite, or, you know, you use it right. What, right? So the fact that Cordova's departure could open up to three, even four DP spots, of course, if Vite leaves, which you never know, based on the form he's been in and his age, his profile could happen. So I think that's another big aspect, is that it also clears up space for this offseason, which could be key, because say the Whitecaps have a great playoff run, but they don't go all the way. Then if they want to upgrade their roster, the fact they have that much space to do so, that could help them be even better next year and help them continue that progress and not risk stagnating because you lose some key players from a team as good as this. Right, like, say example again, the Larea, the elephant in the room. Like, will Larea stay or not? If he leaves, the fact that you could have one DP spot and two U22 spots to replace him, you'd feel a lot more confident about that versus if Cordova sticks around and then you're kind of handcuffed a bit. So I think the flexibility adds in the future is keen. I think that's why it's impressive to see how ruthless the Whitecaps have been, because it shows that they're already maybe proactive. And as we know, they like to plan their signings ahead of time. Like, you know, the likes of a Gall, the likes of a Kubas were things they kind of worked over time to make. Well, now this gives them a few months so that when December comes around and the windows open, that they can maybe even already start making those plans for next year.
Well, and I'm sure that this move in a way was probably made with some targets in mind based on those roster spots they would open up at. Because I know there's several players that they targeted or approached, had conversations with during this past window that they had to sort of put on hold and say, okay, it's too soon, too complicated to get done right now, given the lack of budget. You know, as Axel Schuster talked about, they had, you know, $8,000 or $27,000 or whatever it was left over. They didn't have much. I know there's players they want to go back to in the offseason and have a look at. And I'm assuming this Cordova move probably makes it easier to approach some of those. Yeah, I think in terms of like the Richie as a designated player thing and the implications, the thing I like is that now Richie only creates a roadblock in the sense that he prevents you, I guess, from getting another unrestricted DP if he takes on that role. But as you mentioned, you still have the possibility of either a U23 or a couple under 22 signings with, you know, limited or like less financial implications. So I think that's good. And I mean, you know, heck, if you could somehow find a way to get Richie at some sort of TAM deal, then you've got what feels like almost unlimited roster flexibility. you know, I think that this, my sense is this opens up the likely case where Richie falls into that under 1.8 mil DP role. That kind of seems like the natural fit. And also as a guy who I think wants to stay, but was maybe a little bit on the fence financially, you now can even go to Richie at this point and say, see, we've opened up this spot for you. Don't worry. We're going to take care of you for next year. And I think that can help convince him that, you know, kind of being invested in this project long-term, the way they talked about when they signed him is a, not just a good idea for the team, but a good idea for him personally as well. So, yeah, I think it's it removes the one big question mark about the offseason was we were going to be facing this inevitable log jam of, well, Cordova's a DP, Richie wants to be a DP, what the heck's going to happen? Again, kind of like I'm citing Julian Gressel again, but you know, it's something where they didn't wait to solve the problem later. They got out in front of it and found a permanent solution, because in the past, like if a Julian Gressel had left mid-season, they would have waited until the offseason to find a replacement. And then now they're already moving another player on to make room in the future for the player they brought in mid-season. We are like steps ahead of where this team would have been under Mark DeSantos or, you know, under Carl Robinson, where it felt like a player went out the door and then everyone was shocked and took 3 months to recover and didn't really know what to do. And this just feels like the opposite of that. And I think all the permutations we're talking about here, you know, things that have already been in the war room on the board that they've been playing out. So, you know, overall, I mean, I guess one thing we should say, right, is that like, what does this mean? We can kind of maybe transition into this a little bit. What does this mean in the short-term sense for the Vancouver Whitecaps on the pitch? Because, you know, I want to give Sergio Cordova his due. He was on a bit of a heater in the League's Cup. He was scoring some goals off the bench, providing that threat. Vancouver ultimately, especially now, is not terribly deep at striker. I mean, the depth chart is Brian White, Simon Betcher, Levante Johnson, you know, Lowell Wright, if you want to go down to the MLS next ranks. So, you know, do we see them bring in a like for like free agent replacement here in the short term? Does this hurt the Caps at all? Even though Cordova wasn't performing to DP level, he was still a useful striker on the squad. What kind of effect do you think this has in the short term? And, you know, should we be concerned? Is there any level of concern here for the rest of 2023?
I think, of course, just because you can argue if Cordova is worth the DP spot, if you remove all that out of the equation, you're still losing a useful depth player, one who, again, has shown that he can score goals in the right scenarios, as he showed before the League's Cup break and in the League's Cup. Still, I think the nice thing is the roster freeze is Friday, and for what it's worth, that, you know, there's been some news on the grapevine that sounds like the Whitecaps are indeed targeting a player to fill that roster spot. And that's also key, because I think they have, I mean, this I'm not sure, but I think they had roster spaces already. The only problem was, like Axel mentioned, there was the legitimate cap. So the nice thing is about Cordova leaving is because, you know, DP spots count for like 600K against the cap. They've opened up 600K on the cap. So I think that's huge, because it sounds like, I mean, they're targeting this player won't be a DP. I mean, it's a free agent. You know, it's going to be someone to come in. But there sounds like they're targeting a free agent attacker, more specifically, should hopefully get over the line by Friday. I think that would be key, because then, okay, the playing side doesn't get affected, because you still, with Cordova leaving, you still lose another depth piece. And by bringing one in, that fixes that problem short term. And then long term, the DP stuff, the U22 stuff, that would be more relevant then. But also, like, again, that shows that the Whitecaps have put themselves in a position where when you make efficient roster moves, you can also afford to have a moment where moving on from a DP and bringing in a free agent is seen as a sideways or even a move where you improve, depending on your perspective. Because you, for example, Brian White, this guy is, you know, he's been a lightning rod just because the XG versus actual goals, etc. This is someone who's top 10 in goals in MLS. For what it's worth, I'd say that's DP value, like, right? Because you look at some of the players behind him, what the money they're making. I mean, he's putting, you could argue he's putting DP value as a striker. Well, that allows you to move on from an underperforming DP striker. When you got guys like Ali Ahmed and, you know, what they're doing, that gives you value elsewhere on your roster. You know, Sam Adekugbe now coming in, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, I think this will, you know, it's going to be huge if they're able to get this deal over the line by the weekend, because if they can get another attacker in, I think they'll be in a good situation heading into the playoffs. Because I think that was one thing with Cordova. It would have been, you know, it's one of those where you're almost like, it shows, it's credit to the Whitecaps and the situation they're in, that Cordova's been on the bench for a lot lately, and you've kind of just been like unbothered. It's not like a big deal in the sense like, oh, this DP's on the bench, it's a huge issue. Because it's kind of like, oh, well, like they don't really need him. It's kind of like, yeah, you know, it's a bit of a luxury. So, hey, if they can bring in another super sub, maybe someone who could even get some starts, that would be a huge add. And I think they don't, you know, the bar's so low for what they need from, you know, this free agent signing, that it should allow them, again, assuming it gets over the line, to come in and hopefully thrive.
Well, this is a special version of Alex and Sam from the past here after the episode is recorded, but we're just hopping in to note that basically, the Whitecaps, as we mentioned, were looking to make a free agent veteran attacking player addition ahead of the deadline. We heard rumblings of who it is, just weren't able to say anything. But shout out to JJ Adams, diligent as always. He's been on the case, and he has gotten confirmation on what we'd heard. It's Junior Hoilett that is going to be, hopefully, again, like we said, brought in before the deadline, because of course everything has to be finalized. From what it sounds like, it's gotten quite far along. It sounds like it should be good to go. A 33-year-old attacker, Canadian attacker. He's represented Canada. He was at the latest World Cup. You know, he can play on the wing. He was a winger, but he's now kind of turned into a 10. Can play up front as well in the dual striker system. Can I even play at wing back as he did last year for Reading? So, I mean, Sam, first off, like, you know, big scoop from JJ. What are you expecting from Hoilett?
Well, I think, like we sort of chatted about in the rest of the show, it's a, you know, a veteran attacking option that can kind of fill that. I think like a baseball, it's the utility player, right? Like the guy, you know, he can play second base, can play the outfield. Can maybe even play a little catcher if you need him to. That's kind of what Junior Hoilett is at this point in his career. He's a great set piece guy. He's you know, still got some athletic ability. He's obviously played a lot at high levels in England. He's scored a lot at good levels in England. So I think you're looking at like a St. Ricketts goal scorer type, but then with like a lot of these other attributes that are really good and can provide some value as well. So, you know, ultimately I think this just kind of like adds some efficiency to the roster. You're essentially taking like Sergio Cordova's goal scoring and which you were paying a DP level for. And now you're bringing in like a veteran Canadian international that can probably produce the same kind of goal scoring output, but can also provide all these other tools in a depth role. And then, you know, there's the added thing as well of, hey, you know, Hoilett's been with Richie. He's been with Sam Adekugbe. He's been with these guys prior. They're going to have some good chemistry, some good camaraderie. And you're bringing in another Canadian. We talked about all the marketing benefits, all the just sort of, you know, club culture benefits to bringing in Richie and Sam. And, you know, I don't know if Junior Hoilett would have like made the same impact on his own, but certainly when you pair it together with those other two signings, I think it just kind of adds to the excitement and trades on the, all the positivity that came from the Canadian men's national team around the World Cup cycle. So we were kind of mentioning how, you know, are they going to look to fill a little bit of that offensive goal scoring gap the rest of the season? And it seems like Junior Hoilett's going to be the answer. I'm assuming there's no long-term commitment here. It remains to be seen. Maybe there will be, but I would guess this is like a short-term thing where they're going to play it out through the rest of the year. And then, you know, maybe decide what both parties want at that point.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting the long-term implications. But look, sometimes it's not bad to bring in veterans. I think sometimes it's important. And yeah, I think it'll be interesting because he adds depth first off, right? Like it gives you depth at the 10 all over as well. Plus it gives you a bit of insurance. Say, say Pedro Vita gets sold on, well, at least you have someone who's around who could, potentially step up. And yeah, look, I mean, Hoilett, the big thing is I still think he's got the legs. I think he's someone who's aged very nicely. Like, yeah, he's not going to be the out-and-out runner he was before, but he's almost his game is sharpened up, smartened up as he's gotten older. Like he's going to be good at that number 10 because, he can manipulate space while he's got good hip movement. And I mean, the numbers kind of back it up. Like last year, he only had a goal and assist in the championship, but he was playing wingback on a relegated team. The year before, on a team that dodged relegation by the skin of their teeth on Reading, he still had 3 goals and 2 assists. That was despite being a late signing to Reading as, he wasn't signed right away after. So he missed preseason. He still scored 3 goals, 2 assists, was a huge part of Reading despite their struggles. And overall, we've seen it for Canada as well. He's got a couple assists this year playing for the men's national team. So I think it's something where, A, he still has something to give at 33. Yeah, you see a 33-year-old. And look, he's not going to come in to be the DP, the savior, the guy. They've got the Reingolds and the Kubases. And heck, even they brought in the Adekugbes and the Lureas and the Vites like that. This is nice because he can come in and be a support guy. And I think if a guy like Junior Hoilett is the 13th or 14th guy in your roster, as he probably will be to start, at least, that's not a bad thing. I think that's sort of depth you want from an MLS perspective, because there's a lot of chatter of people like, oh, he should go after Hoilett for a DP at some club, or he should be a, go to TFC and be the guy. So the fact that Vancouver's bringing him in to be a support piece is going to be a good move as well to help their attack. So I think overall, like, as long as the salary is not egregious, but even then, you've opened up a decent amount of salary with Cordova gone. Like, this could be a good punt to really especially help you go for it this year. And maybe it's something where who knows where he factors in long term. But if you have this opportunity available to you, why not?
The only thing I'll add to this to kind of round out this conversation here, and I see what you think about this as well, but, Vanni, no one loves positionless football as much as Vanni Sartini. And Hoilett at this point in his career seems like a really good fit for that mold, right? Where he could be a number 10, he could be a second striker, he could be a wing back. Would Vanni Sartini try to play him in the midfield? A little more center. Who knows, right? Like Vanni is not shy to think outside the box to try some different things. And I think there's a real attraction to players that have a depth of skill sets at their disposal that's a little bit unique and that he can unearth the most out of them. So very, very curious to see how, what does this mean for Pedro Vite? What does this mean at the striker position for guys like Simon Betcher and Levante Johnson? We're going to find out here, hopefully. And I think it's going to be very exciting.
Yeah, no, I think for sure. And I think it's interesting as well. Like the Whitecaps are obviously continuing to become a destination for some of these Canadian players, which hasn't always been the case. Like the fact that, you've been able to convince a Larea and Adekugbe and a Hoilett all to come, right? I think that's also can only be good things for reputation wise. And yeah, I mean, I'm just really intrigued to see what kind of role he comes in and plays on this run, because yeah, the idea of having a 20-30 minutes a game of Junior Hoilett off the bench is not a bad chaos agent, especially we mentioned with Cordova gone, you needed a super sub to come in at the very least. I think this is a pretty good alternative because Hoilett's shown it again. I think unless he's declined severely over the last 2 months, like he was good at the Gold Cup. He's one of Canada's best players at the Gold Cup again, despite playing with a younger team around him. And he's still in the cusp of the senior national team. He's also improved a lot as like he's become a leader on that men's team as well. So that leadership again will help. Like there's a lot of benefit. And yeah, it's wild to go from the beginning of the year, there was zero Canadians, and now you got, I mean, Ahmed's on the cusp of the national team. You got Adekugbe Larea, you got Hoilett. Like, funny how things can change so quickly.
No, I think you're right. And I mean, something to consider too is that, overall, I've expressed my doubts about this in the past when Cordova was playing, but the two striker system, the two like out and out number nines, doesn't really seem to suit this team anyway. And Ryan Gold obviously has been an absolute heater in a more advanced position recently. So, you know, striker depth, while we can, I can whinge about it if I want to and, you know, be like, oh, they don't really have a lot at striker at the moment. That's, it's also kind of like, who cares? Brian White's going to start most of the time. You only really need, you know, one striker. I think, again, it's just that, as you sort of outlined, it's the off the bench super sub. Brian White's legs are gassed, but you still need a goal player. And that's where, can you rely on Simon Betcher, Levante Johnson to get that done? Maybe not at this point, as much as you maybe, there's things to like about both players, but another veteran head in the mix would probably be useful. And that sounds like the type of person that the Whitecaps seem to be going after at the moment to fill that role. So I think that kind of solves their problem if they're able to do that. But again, we're talking around like the fringes here, as opposed to something that's like going to fundamentally change the way this team plays. Alex, I mean, that was Sergio Cordova and his potential move to Turkey. Is there any angle to this, any consequence of this that we've missed?
I'd say we've covered it pretty comprehensive. All I'd like to say to that one point you threw at Mark DeSantis and Carl Robinson. Isn't it nice just also to see a technical director, a sporting director?
I wanted to say in particular, I wasn't around, at least in like a media capacity, enough for Carl to say anything intelligent about it. But for Mark, like, I had a good relationship with Mark. I really like him as a guy. He was flying to Sweden with his brother to go watch players play midweek. Like, it was a mess. So I'm not saying that, you know, Mark had a bad scouting reputation or was incapable. It's a sign of how this franchise has leveled up and less about individual people. I should make that clear.
Oh no, 100%. I'm with you on that. I'm just saying, to your point, like, how nice is it to have a sporting director so that Vanny isn't out there and
it's, you know, tremendous. It's tremendous.
Pounding the pavement in, you know, like going to a Ligue 2 game in France to go sign a Kubas and, you know, having to go to, you know, this and that. It is nice where he just focuses on the coaching and getting the most out of his players. And then Axel's the one doing the, you know, the going to dealing with Nottingham Forest and dealing with Hatchishpore and all that. It's made a big difference. And just, it shows how important that Schuster signing has been in terms of just even like, you know, again, just front office and coaching workload. The fact that there's someone there dealing a lot of that stuff. And it's just wild to think that a few years ago, like, makes you almost feel for the likes of like Robinson and like DeSantis's coaches, that it's also like, you know, you have to coach and build the roster. And it kind of makes you laugh to look at some of the teams that are still trying to do that. Like, again, like TFC, for example, the fact that they hired Bob Bradley to do the coach and the sporting director. And it's like, why not just, even at LA, they had John Thorington, like, they had someone doing that work for him. So it wasn't like there's just so many examples of it in MLS, and you still see coaches hired for both. And it's just like, why? Like, it's just,
I think there's nothing wrong with, I mean, you see this across various sports franchises, especially where coaches develop like a certain reputation to the point where they're viewed really like respectfully as talent evaluators, where they might still get the final say or the final sign off on a lot of roster decisions, but that's not an excuse to just like not have the backroom staff and people inhabiting those roles, right? Like, it's one thing to have the coach be an intimate part of the process, and, you know, where they fall and sort of the chain of command and power structure is one thing, but to have the coach who's responsible for all the day-to-day operations also have to shoulder so much of that responsibility, that certainly doesn't work. And certainly not in today's MLS, right? Like, maybe 10 years ago, you could barely get away with that, but you certainly can't in 2023 in a way that's going to be not only effective in the short term, but sustainable long term. I think that's where the the bigger backroom staff really shows its worth is, again, the ability, like we talked about, to be thinking 3, 4, 5 moves ahead as opposed to being reactive. And it's taken a damn long time, but the Whitecaps finally feel like they're getting.
Well, and I think also you can make the argument in MLS particular, because you could almost argue, because I mean, sporting directors are a part of Europe for, you know, a long time, and ditto now in MLS. You could almost argue you could get away with this structure like this in Europe because, you know, you don't have salary caps, you don't have DPs, you don't have TAMs. Like, as a coach, you can almost get away with just signing the guys you like out of European team and getting away with it. Some clubs do so, some don't. I mean, obviously, there's examples of it not working. I'm definitely team, if you had a choice, get a sporting director. I think it's been proven to work. But you can almost get away with it in some leagues in Europe and some places just because. But in MLS, where you have so many rules, it's like, why even burden your coach with that? Like, your coach should not have to balance, like, figuring out his best, you know, their best tactical setup, their set pieces, their, you know, off ball, on ball shape, while also having to figure out if they can get the new signing under the salary cap and DPs. And like, it's just, that feels absurd and obscene. I think that's the even more funny, like, the funny part. Again, it shows the value of having a sporting director.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, couple news and notes pieces from training we should just dive into briefly here. Shout out to Hard Journalist for reporting this one. So Sam Adekubi limited in training this week. Sounds like he was dealing with a bit of a knee issue that they knew about from Turkey, and Vanny providing a quote that basically said he's only going to go this weekend in Toronto if he's ready to. We saw Sam's minutes probably limited more than Richie's over the course of that last very busy match week. Maybe we, you know, it just seemed like Richie was ready to go a little bit more. And now we get a little bit of insight behind that. I mean, is this Ryan Raposo's music? Does this spell maybe some more extended performances from him this week? And I mean, I don't know. I don't want to say, should we speculate about, you know, Sam's knee issues? Cause really we don't have enough information, but I think at the very least, it's just, this opens up the opportunity for a little more competition at the wide spot in the Inter.
Ryan Raposo has been playing well. You're playing a TFC team that's struggling. Sam Adekugbe, you're going to need him over the course of this end of season and playoffs. If he's not good, if he's not 100%, you got Ryan Raposo. I think it's one where you've got the depth to, you know, no need to even rush. Like, again, especially this stage, especially opponent, especially after the week you've had heading into the international break. This is Ryan Raposo's music, and good. He's been playing well too. Like, he's been pushing Adekugbe and Larea. So that's just, he's ready to step up. And I think that's one where, again, as long as it's not a major knee issue, if it crops up, it happened, just manage him, make sure he's 100%, because there's some big games ahead, especially, you know, at the back end of this road trip. And then at home, there's some huge ones. Like, I mean, DC United, that's an out of conference team you should beat at home. You got St. Louis, which could be, you know, even if they win that St. Louis game, depending on where they are, they could potentially even push up towards first, depending on how things go over the next few weeks. You know, they got LAFC at home in there. There's some big home games ahead, some big road games. Save them for those.
Yeah, absolutely. They got to be smart about it. You know, especially, like, it's tough. You go off such a extended stretch off, then, like, high intensity for a week, then more time off for training. Like, it's been a bit back and forth. Sam could probably just use, like, a normal match on the weekend, recovery, training, match. You know, like, if you could get into that little more regular flow, I feel like that would probably be helpful. Okay, the second thing, news and notes from training and surrounds, is that sounds like in the big picture, Jean-Pierre, it's not Vancouver Whitecaps, not going to happen. I did trial with the squad, saw a couple video clips, but ultimately just seems like it wasn't a fit. I don't know, maybe he's not 100% ready to be back in football, or at the very least, it's not going to work out with the Whitecaps. So, I mean, we praise the zero downside addition when they made it, and, you know, unfortunately we're seeing the not the downside, but just kind of the net neutral result here, where you know, Jean-Pierre is not going to be found money for the Vancouver Whitecaps, but that's okay.
Look, it was a punt worth taking. He was there. He wanted to come. You give him the trial. from what it sounds like, it just, you know, it sounds like game speed, fitness, just sharpness. A lot of that were issues as expected. I mean, such a lengthy layoff, such an unfortunate health situation. And that's something where I imagine as well, like, obviously from the player standpoint, this was a $5 million player just, you know, a year, 2 years ago. It's something where, you know, the Whitecaps didn't feel like he was up to the speed they needed. You know, obviously, I don't think he would have been a $5 million player, but he wouldn't have been a cheap player, I imagine. He's still a talented player. If they just weren't able to meet in the middle, then fair. You had the free trial. You had no, you know, you're not cutting. Like, it's not like you paid a fee to bring him in. Then you're realizing, okay, it's like, I think it was, you know, it was a good risk to take. It didn't work out. It's too bad. I mean, it would have been great to see, you know, a Jean-Pierre in. But also, as we mentioned, this was obviously something where they're looking to bring in an attacker, maybe someone even as soon for the stretch run. And I think that's also, maybe that shows why they've also pivoted the free agent route for, again, this hopeful, you know, hypothetical acquisition that can, you know, hopefully be finalized this week. And I think, you know, once that acquisition comes through, you could also see maybe why it wasn't going to work with Jean-Pierre. And honestly, I think overall it might end up, you know, considering the big picture, the Whitecaps might have done well for themselves there. And you know what? That's good. That was a risk they were worth taking. And again, if you have your next pro team there, use it for chances like this. Bring in guys like a Jean-Pierre who, you know, for whatever reason might not be, you know, coming for a trial, or some of the other players they brought in. Those are good punts to take. And it's hopefully Jean-Pierre can find his feet in Brazil. And who knows, knowing this funny sport of ours, maybe he ends up back in MLS or, you know, with the Whitecaps in a few years' time, because I mean, he's still young, and hopefully this, you know, that health setback doesn't, you know, hopefully he can find his feet again, really, is all what I'd want to say.
Well, absolutely. I have to say, after 2020 or 2021 or whenever it was, I wasn't anticipating the Whitecaps would cross paths with Jean-Pierre again. So that was sort of an unexpected surprise. And who knows, maybe 3-4 years from now, we'll be seeing the same thing in another light. Okay, that was kind of news and notes from training. We're going to transition now a little bit looking ahead. Obviously, the first match in the docket, the big ticket item, is a Canadian showdown with Toronto FC, who have obviously been through some pretty massive struggles this season, very well publicized. You know, you'd have to be living under a rock not to have seen what's gone on. Bob Bradley, the tire fire that ensued. Terry Dunfield, poor Terry. I feel bad for him having to step in and just manage an absolute, you know, cluster. You know what? Like, it's been a mess. And then the high profile acquisition of John Herdman. He's yet to actually be behind the bench for a match of significance. And you know, TFC has obviously been on a terrible run, but recently, a little bit of good form, did secure a big 3-1 win over Philadelphia. So, you know, maybe there's a slight glimmer of hope in there. Alex, we talked about this with Portland a couple weeks ago. That new coach bump can be a dangerous thing for opposition. So the Whitecaps have to face that again. Kind of nice that the Whitecaps aren't, as much as the new coach bump might be beneficial, it's kind of nice that the Whitecaps aren't the team with the new coach bump. For once, I mean, you've been in Toronto certainly a heck of a lot more than me over the last year. You got your finger on the pulse of that stuff a little bit. I mean, base TFC thoughts, like, you know, is this a bit of a snake in the grass here for the Whitecaps? As much as TFC has struggled this season, are there reasons to think this might be a bit of a dangerous matchup?
I think it could be. Just based on their last Philadelphia match before the break, because I think the big thing is it just felt like they weren't going to score. For context, in their last 11 games, they've been shut out in 8 of them. They went on a 6-game streak where they weren't shut out, or where they didn't score. Sorry, that's also partly across the League's Cup and MLS, but still, like, it was dire. But then they came back from League's Cup break, had a month off. They scored 2 against Montreal in an entertaining game. They lost 2-0 to Columbus on the road. Then at home, they scored 3. So they've scored 5 goals in their last 2 home games. It seems like they have a bit of confidence, especially, I mean, you look at some of the goal scorers and Signe's, you know, scoring again, Bernadeschi. Like, those are the guys you want scoring. really for them, I mean, a big issue also remains the defense. They've been leaking goals all season long. And I mean, again, that's they've, but they also haven't been terrible defensively. Like they're like 39 goals against isn't the worst in the East somehow, because there's some teams there that love to leak goals. They just really, it's a mix of at their worst, they just haven't been, like they've just been losing a lot of 1 and 2-0 games. So for the Whitecaps, it's just a matter of don't let their, you know, don't let the stars take over. Like don't give any Insigne Brunelleschi moments of magic, or, you know, let DeAndre Kerr find his way in behind. Maybe get an early goal. Cause I think the big thing is if you can score early on this TFC team, then there it's pretty curtains. But if you let them get one, they do, as they showed against Philly, they scored and they went on a lead. They're actually playing some nice football. Like I think the second goal they scored was a very, like, you know, multi-pass move, you know, good movement, header in the box, great stuff. So just don't let them build any confidence, because it's still a talented team. I think heading into the year, the big issue with TFC wasn't so much talent. I think, again, you have Insigne Brunelleschi, you have a solid squad. It was just age of the squad. There's a lot of older players, which you kind of wonder, would they hold up over MLS, over the course of an MLS season? And then partly linked to that, there was also injury and depth concern. You know, depth concern in the sense that could the old guys hold up? And if they didn't, was there depth behind them? As we saw, the old guys didn't hold up and the depth behind them wasn't too great. But also a lot of their guys are starting to be healthy again. Like Michael Bradley's back after an extended absence, and TFC continues to play better when Bradley's in the lineup. They won recently with him, so having him back is a huge plus. So it's certainly, it's not as dire as I think it was in the summer, but it's still, it's going to be an interesting scenario, I think, for this TFC side.
Yeah, you pointed out their defensive record and how actually that's not terrible in the East. And I think all you have to do is look to a CF Montreal. They've actually allowed one more goal against. They've only scored 5 more goals for, and yet they're sitting 8th in the East. So, you know, the margins there between now, you know, this is obviously not Toronto's aspiration. It's not to be 8th in the Eastern Conference. But that being said, they, you know, a lot of things, both of their own doing and a little bit of luck, have gone against them this season. They could be closer to a competitive playoff team pretty easily. So I think that's important to note that this isn't, you know, it has been a dumpster fire at times, but there are some positives within the squad. I think, kind of like you mentioned, Alex, it's just like looking at the roster. You look at some of the bets they've taken on veteran defensive players, and it just, you know, the combination of guys like, you know, a 33-year-old Matt Hedges, a 30-year-old Shane O'Neill, obviously you got Michael Bradley, you know, well up there in age, that's been playing as a six, probably more than he should be at this point in his career. Sean Johnson in goal, who's been pretty underwhelming. It's just, I think, of one too many aging veterans that they've been relying on to put in big shifts. And, you know, the guys, they've been doing an okay job, but certainly when you're scoring at the rate they've been scoring, which is not very often, you know, getting shut out 13 times in MLS play this season, certainly that kind of defensive record's not going to cut it. So, you know, we should mention too that Richie Larea was a guy with 2 goals, 3 assists for TFC this season, and now he's on the other side of the pitch. So that's a little bit of a loss for a TFC team that hasn't produced a lot. But as you mentioned too, you know, the Italians, for all their foibles and drama this season, they have come on a little bit recently, and we'll see what John Herdman can do with this squad. I mean, ultimately, I think this is one that the Whitecaps have to fancy themselves to at least get some points. But TFC's been okay at home. They're 4-6-4. It's really been away from home where they've literally only secured 4 points all season. Somehow a significantly worse record than Vancouver Whitecaps, especially after Vancouver's last week. So yeah, this is one where you might have liked TFC coming to Vancouver, but nonetheless, I think points to be gained obviously here, especially with Vancouver's recent road form.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think, and this TFC team's funny because, like, yeah, I think for me it was just they didn't address some key areas of their roster build. I think they made some solid moves in some areas, but now I think you look at this team, it's clear it's spine positions. Because for me, it's a debate because, again, Michael Bradley is such a, you know, a hard one to navigate around, I'd say, in Toronto, partly because he is a club legend. And he still, when he plays, he brings value. I just think defensively, like, I'm thinking, for example, like, yeah, if they had someone like a Kubas at TFC, huge. That's exactly what they need. A mobile ball winner who can also play on the ball. And then also they just haven't really addressed the center back position. You know, Matt Hedges seemed promising-ish, but then he moved on anyways. Sigurd Rosted kind of was the lesser of the two, you know, and I think you've kind of seen that now that Hedges is gone. Shane O'Neill just, you know, really he's struggled. I mean, Mabika showed a couple weeks of promise, but he's really struggled as of late. So they don't really have much answer at center back. Then the number nine situation. I mean, at one point they're paying over almost $3 million on one goal when DeAndre Kerr is, you know, scored more of that as a winger moved up to the number nine position, and he's kind of been the best choice. Shows that they haven't figured out the nine situation. And in goal, look, Sean Johnson was always solid at NYCFC, but also, as we've kind of seen, part of that was they had a pretty darn good defense in front of him. It was one of those where, don't get me wrong, good goalie, and I mean, there's a reason why he plays for the US, you know, from time to time, and it has been, you know, won an MLS Cup, but it was very much a system goalie. And sometimes you can see that when you move a system. Of course, I don't fancy many goalkeepers playing behind this defense right now, but it also hasn't helped. And I think that's key, that those are four key spine positions, right? It's what, like your striker, your 10, your 6, your CB, and your goalkeeper. And of those positions, they don't really have a 10. And then the other four, they haven't really had success at. And that's also hurt them. So that's they're a victim of their roster build in that sense. And that also kind of explains their road form. Because I think if you're going to be good on the road in MLS, you also need a bit of a structure, a bit of identity, and some players that can kind of step up and help you defensively and help you and, you know, score goals in clutch moments. And the fact they don't really have a consistent nine, a consistent, you know, it's even the number six, Michael Bradley's been injured half the year anyway, so he hasn't even been able to show the impact that he can also bring on the other side. So overall, I think those things have contributed to it. So yeah, it should be interesting. I think that's why it's still something where don't expect them to be walkovers. They're still decent at home. They still got decent pieces. But as we saw, it's going to be fascinating to see what Herdman and company do, because they have some key areas to address in their roster. And until then, it'll remain a frustratingly inconsistent team, as we've seen.
Your point's a really good one about the spine positions, because I think that that's like ultimately the, in some alternate universe where Insigne and Bernadeschi are a number nine and a number six, maybe going on the high price Europeans is a good strategy. But when you've picked, you know, players that aren't part of that spine, they're more kind of like, well, they could score a brace in a match, but you might lose 3-2. That makes it really difficult to live when the rest of your roster isn't up, especially when the rest of your roster isn't up to snuff, right? And I feel like the Vancouver Whitecaps, conversely, have done a nice job addressing that, where, you know, who are their best two players? It's a number 10 and a number 6. You know, Ranko Veselinovic been pretty darn good. Goalkeeping was a mess last year. They addressed that significantly with Yoi Takaoka. I think we've seen in Vancouver the benefit of a little more consistency at those, in air quotes, spine positions. So, you know, that's a job for John Herdman to figure out who on the roster can he rely on in big spots? Who does he have to find a suitable replacement or a suitable addition to fit that need? So in the meantime, I think for Vancouver, it's about, you know, watching out for the dangerous Italians, and then, you know, expecting and anticipating that they'll be able to create. You know, this is ultimately one, I think, if you're Vancouver, if you can limit Toronto to one or even two goals, you probably fancy your ability to go in there and score a couple. So, I think, you know, might as well almost go wide open and take this Toronto team straight on, because I think that, you know, that's there's no reason to hold back in this match if you're Vancouver. And I'm interested to see what they've been cooking up this week at training and how they'll set up when they do head out to the shores of the Great Lakes there. And you know, it's always fun when it's a Canadian matchup. This sort of, you know, Vancouver's had a lot of CPL rivals in the Canadian Championship recently, so I feel like I'm almost craving and starved for a little more, you know, Vancouver versus CF Montreal, Vancouver versus TFC. It feels like it's been too long.
Yeah, they need to bring back the two games a year against Canadian teams, home and away. It feels just too much, this 1 year home, 1 year away, 1 year home. Because last year,
I missed it.
At home, but it was like May 7th, 2022 is the last time they played TFC in league play. It's over 14 months. That feels wrong. Of course, they had the Canadian Championship final, but even now, because with that only being one leg, like you play them at most two times a year. It's like, yeah, this year they were only playing them once and Montreal twice. And it just feels, they got to find, I know obviously there's too many teams now in MLS, but they got to find a way. Like if they're going to play Seattle and Portland three times, that also just messes up the Cascadia Cup balance. So it almost makes sense to have a home and away with TFC and Montreal. I know it's not balanced with the East-West, but there's some things that feel like you have to make an exception for, because there's a few rivalries, I guess, although I say that. Knowing MLS, what will you see? Also, if Vancouver plays Montreal and TFC twice, you're going to see LAFC Inter Miami twice. Just, you know, they're obviously rivals, right? No, they're.
Well, I was going to say, like, if we're doing it on a napkin right now, forget League's Cup. I'd love if there was just some little isolated MLS Canadian Cup competition during one of those breaks, where they just do like a little mini tournament between the three Canadian teams. And you could probably do it across MLS, where you pick like local regional rivalries. You know, you do a California one, you do a you know, East Coast metropolitan one, you do a Southeast. You could do all these little like mini regional cups mid-season. I think that would be, I mean, we're trying to shoehorn in more CF Montreal and TFC matches here, but that's one idea you could go with.
Yeah, or some sort of I'm with you. Just they gotta make it happen. They gotta make it happen, because it feels wrong. It feels wrong. But anyways, for those, I mean, that sounds like there'll be a good amount of Whitecaps fans there, and why not? It's a good trip to Toronto. You know, if you booked right, there's some cheap airlines that head out there. Tickets probably aren't too expensive these days with TFC. I mean, knowing a lot of people in Vancouver, they don't have family or friends out in Toronto anyway, so a place to crash.
People going to university out there from BC, you know, I know there's a lot of us that have made the pilgrimage at some point back and forth. So, you know, it's your chance to cheer on your team from afar.
And the Whitecaps are doing well this year, so it's a chance for also a big win in the playoff race to push up to top three. Like, you know, it's a good time. So I think it's exciting. I guess other just notes and news from that. For those unfamiliar, John Herdman still hasn't actually assumed responsibility of TFC, not till October 1st, as he's helping Canada Soccer with their transition of the men's head coach. And also just, you know, Terry Dumfield seeing out that. So he was in the building for the Philadelphia win. Who knows, maybe it was a Ted Lasso moment. You know, they just, Herdman's there in the building. You get the win for your future coach. Great story. But he actually wasn't coaching. It was still Mr. Terry Dunfield himself. So that's just worth noting that Herdman actually isn't in and implementing his ideas. Don't expect to see him on the touchline.
Well, question for you, because you might know this more intimately than me. Do you think he's had any say or influence on how they've been training, how they've been playing recently? Or is it like properly he's had nothing to do with the role until October 1st?
I think there's probably been discussions. I think especially the fact that he was there, but I don't think, like, also I think it's something where there's not much to change as well, because it's kind of like, it's more, I think this period, especially for him, is going to be more like, what are guys you keep around? Like, who are the guys?
Talent evaluation. Guys like Azzurro, who's making the team next year?
Yeah, talent and character evaluation, I'd almost argue, especially knowing Herdman and his, you know, again, like I think a big part of his hire, and I think he'll have a lot of success of the hire if the culture gets right, because that's obviously the one big issue with TFC, even beyond, like, yeah, they've had all these struggles, whatever, but the fact that there's been so much off-field turmoils, leaks, fights, etc., like that's the sort of stuff that will be, you know, huge to clean out. So I think it's almost as much as you know, figuring out what kind of players he has, who's talented and got the character to stick around. So I can't imagine much would change as well tactically. And like, to be fair, they have a good, I'd say like they have, like if they stick with the 4-3-3, they have some pieces across the roster I'd keep who could, you know, be worth building around. It's just, again, for me, I said it since Bob Bradley was there. I think if Bob Bradley wanted to play the up and up tempo 4-3-3, he needed to upgrade the six and maybe, you know, some other positions at the back. I just think, again, it was not of no disservice to Michael Bradley, but it's like part of Bob Bradley's success at LAFC, well, with Edward Atuesta pulling the strings. I think it's almost, I feel like for Bob Bradley as well, like it was kind of the beginning of the end when Atuesta left, because he was such a key part of what, you know, Bradley did. So I think that was always going to be one. But so I think they have, if Herdman sticks and brings in a four, it sticks with the 4-3-3, as long as they bring in the right replacements, it's that. So yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see, especially because Herdman's methods, as we've seen with Canada, are unique. We've seen the sword, we've seen the speeches, we've seen everything. So kind of curious to see what he's cooking up, because yeah, he's certainly going to have his work cut out, especially if there's a world where somehow Insigne and Bernadeschi, maybe they're just too expensive to move on. They're both here next year. Well, he's going to have, you know, if he thought it was something to get a fractured Canada team back together, I mean, getting two Italians that don't like each other back on the same page might be an even tougher test.
Yeah, better him than me trying to figure that one out. okay, well, let's dive into just rapid fire here prediction for this upcoming weekend against TFC. I'm gonna go a bit of a barn burner. I'm gonna say 3-2 Vancouver Whitecaps. They continue their strong road form. I feel like there's goals in this one. TFC's found a little bit of swagger, a little bit of confidence, but I don't feel like they can keep the ball out of their net against one of the best creative teams in MLS. So I'm going to say 3-2 VWFC.
Yeah, I'm probably going to lean 3-1 Vancouver. I think there's enough goals, especially arrested Vancouver.
Man, I thought you were going to go more conservative, the 2-2 draw, but no, dropping the hammer with 3-1. I like it.
No, I think it's something where I think the Whitecaps know how important this game is, and they're rested, international break, go for the goals. Like you mentioned, they're high XG, TFC's defense. I think they score one early and then go, but also I think TFC has one in them. I think they can definitely catch Vancouver in a moment. Bernadeschi does his thing. That just feels so Whitecaps to give up a goal. Like it's going to be a worldie or something. I just think, yeah, I think offensively, especially after that last week of NYCFC, Chicago, Portland, it feels, especially across the Portland and Chicago games when they were fresh, they could have scored 7 or 8. And I'm thinking that against the TFC defense, it hasn't been great. They're now fresh after, because against NYCFC, they kind of lost their legs. Their legs will be back. So I expect that offense to be back and yeah, for goals to be there.
Wow. Either way, I think 3 goals for the Vancouver Whitecaps would probably spell a very good day. So hopefully we're correct on that front. Either way, going to be an interesting match. And yeah, looking forward to the banter on social. It's always fun when we get these matchups. So yeah, hope everyone's excited, looking forward to that. All right, we're going to round out the show here, Alex, with a little bit of CPL talk. As you've got mentioned here in the show notes, Vancouver FC, they're keeping their hopes alive. Yes, it's slim, but it's not over just yet. The CPL table continues to just be tightly contested, especially those top 5 spots. There's a lot of competition. And Vancouver, you know, even if they're very unlikely to claim one of those playoff spots themselves, they're making a little bit of noise. They're creating a little bit of frustration for the top teams. We saw Pacific have some trouble. Now Atletico goes down, and then there's you know, by the time people listen to this, it's probably happened, but a huge matchup between Atletico and Pacific, which, you know, is not only crucial for Ottawa's playoff positioning, but Pacific's hopes in the title race. So, yeah, credit to Vancouver FC for finding some goals and finding themselves a win. It feels like they've taken a little bit of an uptick recently. It's, you know, I feel like almost the pressure's off at this point, and they're playing with a little bit of house money.
Yeah, I think it's good just because they're continuing to build their game model. I think that's huge. Just, you know, they've obviously settled into this more three in midfield and, you know, settling into a back line, and it's helping. And, you know, they're just slowly finding their feet in the offense. I think it's interesting to see that. I mean, they have to figure out what the heck to do up front. But for example, you know, the 1-2 punch of Buttar and Kentav have been pretty good, you know, because, you know, Kentav, I think he's scored now. He scored 2 goals in the last 4 games. Buttar scored 3 goals and has an assist in the last few games. It's just really Alejandro Diaz can't score. Sean Hundle hasn't been able to get minutes because Diaz has been kind of become the guy. So they just need to figure that out, but that's positive. I think at this stage, look, I think the playoffs, it's very, very I think at this point they could almost be eliminated as soon as this week, depending on the Ottawa result as well. It's like it's something they're going to need to keep getting a lot of things to go their way. Feels like, yeah, it's going to be a mathematical eventuality. But also at the same time, if you at the end of the day, if you can disrupt, if Ottawa misses the playoffs by 3 points, if, you know, some of these teams miss out, you can, that'll feel satisfying. And look, I think the nicest thing, it's been something that, you know, at least Afshin Gopi's mentioned as well for Vancouver, is this is also starting to be about next year. It's like these wins now that can give you a bit of momentum. They can help you have an identity already in place. You can kind of build a core, especially the fact they have so many U21 players. Well, all that experience they got, it's only going to help them grow and be better next year. So it's just it's about building blocks for next season. And look, it also helps from a fan perspective that was an entertaining game, this Ottawa one. Like a good Ottawa team comes to town. You know, this is an Ottawa team with title hopes, playoff hopes. They have the, you know, the front runner for MVP, last year's MVP. And then Vancouver goes and scores the first goal. Great goal. Goes toe-to-toe. Even gives up a frustrating one that Calum Irving, let's just say he'll want back. It's not what we're used to seeing from Irving. But then despite giving up a goal like that, maybe earlier in the season, they fold and they lose 3-1. But they keep after it. And you get a 91st minute winner. Send the fans home happy. Pretty cool too that an 18-year-old from North Vancouver scores the winner. And that's what you want from both in terms of building blocks, but also from a fan perspective. That sort of stuff can maybe help in the long term. So it's those are small wins all around that you want.
I'm just going to add here, we're kicking back to the Whitecaps briefly. Our friend Manuel Veth reporting that the Sergio Cordova deal is now pretty much done, and that the Whitecaps will make back their initial transfer fee of around 2 million euros. So, I mean, I think that just echoes what we were saying off the top, which is, you know, they acknowledge their misstep, their, you know, the fact it wasn't a great fit. They're moving on, and it seems like it's not even really going to hurt them that much financially. So, yeah, I just wanted to point that out since it's sort of dropped as the show is going on. But then, Alex, flipping to Vancouver Island in terms of the CPL content, man, I don't know if the Wanderers and Pacific are going to be best friends after this past week, because in terms of the title race between Cavalry and Pacific, you know, the Wanderers and Pacific draw each other, and then the Wanderers promptly lose to Cavalry, handing them 3 points in the title race. And then, as I mentioned again, a huge matchup between Ottawa and Pacific tonight. I mean, it's not over yet. There's still plenty of possibility for Pacific, especially with a match in hand, which is obviously going to be played promptly here. But, you know, things are getting tight for Pacific at this point. It feels like it's maybe slipping ever so slightly out of their grasp.
Yeah, but I mean, that's why this next stretch is so big, because I mean, it's going to be tough to catch Cavalry, no doubt. I think especially Cavalry, that Halifax win is ginormous purely because they do that now. They win against Vancouver. Basically, if results go their way, their magic number could drop down to like 1, if I'm not mistaken, for the title, not because they already booked a playoff spot as well. So look, I think for Pacific, if you can win the regular season title, great. But also, I think from your perspective, there's still another, you know, title on the line, that being the North Star Shield, the playoff title, plus the Champions Cup spot, which is also a huge incentive. And the best way to do that is to finish top two. You play Cavalry in the one-off playoff game for the spot in the final. You get the spot in the final and you host the final, then that's a different story. So at the very least, if you're not getting that first spot, if it ends up being Cavalry, well, gun to play them, especially that, you know, you'd end up having to play them in that 1v2 match of course. Plus, when you finish top two, you got that safety buffer of being able to drop down and play, you know, the other teams. Like for Pacific, they have to push for that top two. And I mean, this next two stretches is crucial because they play Ottawa, York, and Forge all the way, but they beat Forge and Ottawa away early this season. They drew York away with the young lineup. Those are points they can absolutely get. And hey, make the title race interesting. We mentioned it last week. They play Cavalry on the last week. So why at least keep it alive until then, and maybe we'll make for a fun ending. But, you know, bit of a tough result this past weekend against Halifax. They drew 1-1. But luckily for them, everyone dropped points around them. So it's kind of net zero in terms of that. So just get back on a winning track, beat Ottawa, and just at least continue to put yourself in the best position to push for that top two.
Yeah, absolutely. As much as the, you know, the regular season title is nice, I think that, you know, Pacific knows that the North Star Shield is what they're really after. And, you know, they want a taste of that again. So I'm looking forward to the matchup tonight for me, and just looking forward to the rest of the CPL season here, because I think things are getting congested. Things are getting exciting. Really, all season long, it's been there's been lots of storylines, lots of great matchups, and I think this is only going to continue down the stretch run here. Alex, any final thoughts? Anything we missed here before we sign off and kind of get you on your way for the rest of the week here at the Third Sub?
No, I mean, comprehensive big week ahead. Yeah, I mean, even for us personally, this definitely, you might, if you listen to this somehow before, I mean, again, there's Pacific, Ottawa today. Can't wait to tuck into some rare Wednesday afternoon, 2:30 Pacific time action in the CPL. Can't complain. That's going to be nice. But yeah, no, big week ahead for the Whitecaps. Excited to see how it all goes, and we'll certainly be back soon, because it's a busy stretch in both leagues, playoff pushes. You know, I saw it's wild to see like FC Cincinnati clinched a playoff spot in August as well. So it's that season in MLS where a couple wins, all of a sudden you're in that discussion. So it's the best time of year for all that, and ditto in the CPL. So I'm just looking forward to, you can find me on Twitter at Alex Gongaruzic, on IG/threads at Adrian on the case. And, I'll throw it to Sam to close out this edition of the show.
Yeah, you can find me, as always, at Samuel_Rowboat on Twitter, at thethirdsub.ca. Check us out on social, whether that's Twitter, Threads, the website, The Third Sub. You can find us everywhere. It's been a little quiet recently. There's not been as much Whitecaps action, but looking forward to this stretch run and covering every up and down along the way, because I think it's going to be fun. Thanks so much, everyone, for listening. As always, I'll just, you know, say, hey, leave a review, subscribe to the podcast, leave a comment if you have a question, anything like that. We're always happy to have a conversation. So thanks for listening, everyone. We'll chat again soon.